and welcome to another episode of Work Beyond Mac. I'm your host, Jason Cipriani. On this episode, I talk with Luis, a full-stack developer who works primarily on his iPad. His setup consists of a lot of apps in order to make his job possible, and even a portable external monitor that sounds really cool and fun to use. Speaking of fun, I had a ton of fun talking with Luis, and I hope that his knowledge and advice is helpful to those of you who are looking to start doing more developing or developer work on Apple's tablet. Now, before I welcome today's guest, I just want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of this episode, Kensington. If you've never checked out any of their Apple accessories, including docks, rugged cases, locks, and privacy screens, please make sure to do that at kensington.com. I also want to take a moment to thank you for downloading and listening to Work Beyond Mac. If you enjoy the show, please consider leaving a review or a rating in your favorite app, as well as subscribing or following the podcast so you get alerted of new episodes, which occur every other Tuesday. All right, now let's dive into the show. Hey, Luis, thanks for joining the show. I really appreciate it, and it's good to have you here.
Hey, man, thank you very much for having me. It's fun. It's really refreshing to talk with someone who actually thinks that the iPad is more than a tablet. I'm the weird guy in my company which thinks the iPad is more than just a toy. And it's really refreshing to meet someone that actually thinks the same as I do.
The weird guy in your company, huh? You know, one of these days.
Well, it's what they call me sometimes. I mean, I've been calling multiple things, but this is the weird guy who does the work from an iPad.
That sounds awesome. Actually, in one of these days, people are actually going to, with any luck, come to you and ask you for advice on how to do work on their iPad once they see the light, I think. So
that is correct, my friend.
Why don't you take a few seconds, a minute or so, to introduce yourself, tell the listeners who you are, and a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Luis Alcaraz. I'm a Mexican living in the U.S., living the dream. Yay. I'm a full-stack developer at Sync Partners. It's a small company in Indianapolis. So basically what I do in my daily work, it's making software. So I do mobile applications, I do web applications. And what makes me different from the rest of my team is that I decided personally to use an iPad to build all of this. And it's kind of weird because in the market, when you talk to a developer, they always talked about, yeah, I have a MacBook Pro 16 inches, I have huge computer, multiple monitors and all that kind of stuff. But then here's me doing the same thing, same amount of work, but in a small device that is portable and I can just carry it with me. And it's always, like I say, it's perpetually connected, which is my amazing iPad. That's basically what I am. I'm just a developer using an iPad and I'm really liking it, my friend.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, I have a lot of developer friends myself. I've tinkered with it in the past and do some messing around with Raspberry Pis and whatnot from my iPad. But yeah, it is funny when you talk to developers, they all have, like you said, giant setups with the most powerful MacBook Pro they can buy and some giant headphones. And yeah, I mean, if you've watched Silicon Valley, that's pretty much spot on for...
Let me tell you this, you are wrong. I mean, the iPad is not a cheap tool.
Right.
I mean, it's as expensive as other devices that they are using.
Yeah.
But once a developer told me, you are as powerful as the tool that you are using.
That's correct.
And it doesn't matter if you are writing code in a piece of paper. If you are good at what you are doing, then you're awesome. And you don't have to be even looked down from other developers. You do what you are best doing it in the tool that makes more sense to you. So it's let me tell you something. It's not the first time that someone just called me weird for using a device that it wasn't intended to be used for that. A couple of years ago, I remember that I started using non-conventional tools for development. Probably you know this. That's a library or application called Code Anywhere. Yeah. Which is basically a web-based development tool where you have containers. You can just look up your code. And it was intended to be used from a Chrome OS device. A couple of years ago, I tried that, and it was amazing. But when I touched the iPad Pro 2015, the huge iPad, the almost 13-inch iPad, and I fire up the same tool code anywhere into my iPad, I was blown away. I was like, I don't need my laptop anymore. Yeah. This is my device. It's always connected. The battery lasts amazingly longer than my laptop. I can do the same amount of work. And I was like, yes, yes, this is it. This is the holy grail. This is the way of doing things.
So was that your first time that you realized that the iPad was something that you could actually work from and not just use it to, you know, watch movies?
Well, yes. I mean, I have been amazed about the iPad since the first version.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm an Apple fan. I mean, diehard Apple fan. I had the first iPhone. Actually, I came to the US and stood in line in New York to buy the first iPhone. It was way expensive back in the days. And then after that, but before that, I was a Trio user. I love my Palm Trio, and I do have the same device that I carry with me when I went to New York. When I got the first iPhone, I was like, this is something else. The same thing happened with the iPad. And to be honest, I felt at first that the iPad, it was a great content consumption device.
Yeah, I think everyone felt that way at first.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, I do remember that seeing Steve Jobs sitting on that couch and just talking to us about you can consume media, you can read the news. And I was like, yeah, but I have my phone for that. And luckily, the developers just came up and just gave us all this amazing application. And actually, at that point, we had a real success when it comes to business made on an iPad. I remember the first application work-wise that I used on an iPad was for having meetings. It was Zoom. And also, what is it called? Join Me. Join Me were the first two applications to allow you to have a meeting, a real full-size meeting within a tablet. I mean, yeah, we can talk about Windows 8 and we can talk about Windows RT if you remember that fiasco.
Sure. Yeah. Microsoft would rather forget it, I'm sure.
I don't know, man. I mean, I don't hate them, but honestly, everything that they tried to do to copy Apple in, they failed. And I love my Xbox. I hope that the same guy who was in charge of the Zoom or was in charge of Windows Mobile doesn't get in charge of the Xbox, because otherwise, yeah, it's going to be chaos. But let's hope for
the
best.
I feel that. Yeah, I remember. So I took a look at the 10-year anniversary of the iPad. This would have been last year. And I sat down and went back and I watched the original iPad announcement. And I remember Steve Jobs sitting in that leather chair doing all the same things you just mentioned, going through the New York Times, pinching and zooming on videos and articles and all this other stuff, photos. And it was very much positioned as a consumption device from the keynote up front. But later on, and it didn't get as much stage time, Apple did kind of touch on the versatility and the productivity side of it by revealing the iWork suite was coming to it. They had that goofy looking dock that you put the iPad in that also had a keyboard at the bottom. It was the 30-pin dock that held it in portrait mode instead of landscape for you to work on your iWork documents. So I think that part of the iPad team, I guess, would be a good way to say it, wanted it to be a productivity device, but yet somehow what ended up coming out and what most of us were left with on stage or after Jobs took the stage was, hey, look, we can use this to watch videos and look at our photos and send emails and all that other stuff. And the work side of it kind of got pushed to the side, and that's the narrative that took over. But over the years, to your point, that narrative has kind of gone flipped around. And I know you may be the weird one in your company with working on your iPad, but there's a lot of people that get a lot of work done on their iPad, whether it's just a couple hours a day or it's all in work all day long on their iPad. So that narrative's starting to flip and gain momentum going towards the other side. So what's your current iPad setup like right now? What are you using right now?
Well, right now I'm using a 2020 iPad Pro 11 inch. It's top of the line, 4G LTE, 1 terabyte hard drive. That's my daily driver, my friend. And it's not just the iPad itself, it's also the accessories and the software that combine all together actually give you all this amazing, powerful tool to do everything that you need to do. I don't change my iPad very often. Before this, I was using my 2015 iPad Pro 12.9 inches. And that device just helped me for 5 years. And it was an amazing, and I just changed my iPad, not because it wasn't powerful enough. Honestly, it was because of the size. When I got my 13 inch, I was like, yes, I need all this real estate. It's amazing. It's big and it can drive attention anywhere that I go. But then I was like, no, man, I need something to use on my couch as well. But I don't want to leave my I don't want to bring my computer with me and all that kind of stuff. So I just downsized it to 11 inch, and frankly, I'm happy that I did. I remember that at that time we didn't have the Magic Keyboard that we have today, which I love, by the way. But we have several keyboards, and the one that actually stood up to me was the Logitech Slim Combo keyboard. Just because I'm a developer and I'm a night owl. So basically, I work at the night, and the backlit keys has been amazing.
Yeah, because the smart cover didn't have backlit keys, right? The first time we got backlit
Yeah,
keys from Apple was with the Magic Keyboard and trackpad.
that is correct. But also at the same time, honestly, I was jealous of other people having the Surface that with that magic hinge, you can just put it in any position that you want. But when I paired my huge iPad Pro with the Logitech Slim Combo keyboard, I was able to do the same thing and at the same time keep using my iPad, which I have invested a lot of money into applications. But yeah, that's my main driver, my iPad Pro 11 inch. And honestly, I don't believe that I will change it anytime soon.
So even if the rumors are true and within the next few weeks we see a 2021 iPad Pro with a mini LED and all the stuff that's been rumored, you're not going to be enticed at all?
I would like to, but my wife will not allow me to do it. And here's the thing, at home, we buy two devices of the same kind. So my wife has the same 2020 iPad Pro 11 inch, the same that I have. Every time that we switch iPhones, it's two devices. So yeah, I would like to, but she will not let me to because, budget stuff.
totally understand. So you develop various
Yes.
products, and you do this, like you said, all from your iPad. So let's kind of give me an idea of what your daily routine is like. And I know you do a lot of different stuff. So if we want to break it down into different sections of development and how you do it, that's fine. Or if you want to go all in, however you want to approach it. But let's go through some of the apps you use because there's some fascinating stuff here and what you like about them, what you don't like about them, and walk through it all.
Yeah, of course, it's amazing. So, as a full stack developer, you have to tackle multiple tasks. I have to manage backend. I have to do front end. I have to do testing. I have to do mobile applications. Basically, what's pretty much what full stack developer means. Let's start for the backend, which is the first part of the code. So, when I have to do any backend work, my applications that I choose to use are various. Most likely, I like to use the command line, and Blink Shell is the first application that comes into my mind. That application allows me to connect with a secure shell client to my servers, and I can do anything that I do on any other client. Even I can use drag and drop files, applications, and everything because they have a function called SCP integrated with them. So you can just drag and drop something from the Finder, just drop it into the application, and it will just copy to the server. That's something that I like from Blink Shell. It's not that expensive though, but it's not free. But honestly, it doesn't matter because this guy has made an amazing application and the cost is really accessible. Transmit, Shellfish are other applications that I use for accessing the backend side of the servers. But when it comes to making changes, I do my code using Textastic.
Oh, Textastic. That's, okay, yeah.
That's the most versatile text editor that I have used on an iPad. I mean, and I have used a lot. Sure. I have used Coda. I have used the one that it's integrated with Working Copy. But so far, I end up myself coming back to Textastic because it's very nice.
Well, yeah, what do you like about it so much? Like, what keeps bringing you back?
Well, I will say that the first thing that actually I like is the keyword integration. You can have a specific shortcut. You can have the shortcut that is intended to be used for that language. You have autocomplete as well. Color coding, depending on the extension of the file, you will have color coding. And basically just make my life easier because of the autocomplete feature. And they support many, many programming languages, not only the most common, but I have found myself trying to do something in Go. And I was like, oh my God, this one knows exactly what I'm trying to do. So I would just like copy and paste and just do it that way. They have done an amazing. Well, here's the thing with that. I believe this application was made from developers as well. So they know exactly what they need to do.
Yeah, they built it for themselves and it just happened to be good enough for everyone else.
Exactly. They were like, okay, I can do this for myself and it's gonna work for the rest of the developers. So let's just put it into the store. And actually, it's one of the applications that I recommend when someone tells me, hey, I need to do some code on my iPad. Textastic. Just use it. You'll love it.
Interesting. Yes. So I went down a rabbit hole a few months ago of trying to improve how I manage my Raspberry Pis because I have 6 or 7 of them in my home for different tasks and different things. And so I ended up downloading Code Editor by Panic, which is, I think it was called Coda at one point, or yes. At least the desktop version is Coda 2. And that's what I settled on. And I looked at Textastic. It even trips me up for a little bit. And I can't explain why I went to Code Editor. It just, the interface looked a little bit friendlier to me as a non-developer and someone who has to Google basic terminal commands. But before that, I actually used an app called Termius to access terminal and SSH into the various Raspberry Pis around my home, which I found to work pretty well. But I really enjoy Code Editor because it's like I said, it's a lot more straightforward than I thought Textastic was as a non-developer. So it's interesting to hear how much you enjoy it and like it for someone that is a developer. And to your point of it being made by developers, you know, for themselves. Yes. I think that really speaks to that quite a bit.
I mean, Panic is an amazing company and they do another application that I like to use, which is Transmit.
Yeah.
And if you are using Transmit, makes a lot of sense to also use Prompt as a secure shell client. And at the same time, use Code Editor. Well, I keep referring as Coda because I used to know it as Coda from my back in the days.
Yeah.
But they all work together and they just behave like one amazing ecosystem. And you can just configure your server and your connections in one application and it will be replicated across all other applications. So you don't have to redo multiple steps at a time. If you are using an application from different developers, then you have to configure the same thing over and over again. So yeah, makes a lot of sense. If you like Code Editor by Panic, probably just buying the whole suite of applications that they offer, which is Transmit and Prompt, will make a lot of sense because you're going to be just ending up just configuring it once. And also, if you change devices, those settings will follow you along.
Yeah.
All you have to do is configure this Panic Sync kind of stuff, and it will just replicate across iCloud devices. Yeah, it's very nice, and I love that company.
Yeah, I love being able to sit down at my Mac and access the same setup I have on my iPad as the same setup as I have on my iPhone. It works real seamlessly together.
There's only one thing that I don't like about their software is that a couple of the updates, you have to pay extra for it or you have to pay full price for a couple of them. That happened with Transmit when they left the Apple, the App Store because, you know, their opinions and stuff. That's the only thing that I don't like, that you have to keep paying premium for the same applications over and over again.
Yeah, I get that. I totally understand. But at the end of the day, and maybe I'm wrong in my point of view here, like when I see, when I see people complain about apps, and this is kind of related to what you were saying, but when I see people complain about apps going to subscription or charging for a big upgrade, I get it. But at the same time, these are apps that I rely on, like Tweetbot or Deliveries, that I rely on every single day. And so if the developer is allowed to keep making money, if the developer is releasing updates and it means they get to keep making money and provide more updates in the future, then I'm okay with it. But if a developer, and I don't remember the whole Transmit thing, so I'm not speaking to that, but if the developer is charging money for the same exact app, only outside of an app store, then yeah, I can see why you would have issue with that. But like I said, I don't remember exactly what happened with Transmit, so I'm not speaking to that. But I don't mean to get off on a tangent that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I just... Man, especially when Tweetbot just recently updated and they went to subscription, and my entire Twitter timeline was people complaining all day long. And it's just like, you live on the app, pay the money. What is it, $4 or $5 a year? That's nothing, you know?
Exactly. It makes sense. If you use it all the time, if you make money out of it, probably makes sense to just pay for the subscription. For example, I use another application for the backend development, which is database access. That's very important for a developer. Sometimes you have to manage the database. And one of the applications that I use actually uses the same model that you described. It's called SQL Pro Studio. And that application, it's either you pay one time a good chunk of money, or you pay a subscription, or you pay by the drink. You can pay monthly. And this developer keeps bringing new updates every week. Religiously. Yeah. Every week you need get new stuff. And it makes sense to pay for an application that actually it's saving your bacon on a daily basis to pay that subscription.
Yeah, I mean, I live on Twitter. I cover news, right? And it's a networking tool. And so I have no problem paying good money. And what I consider Tweetbot charging is not good money. They're charging very little money. So I have no problem paying good money to keep my same setup and allow me to access it in the way I prefer. But yeah, it's one of those things that we got spoiled with free apps or 99-cent apps for so long, and it's not long-term. It's not economically feasible for developers. So there's that.
You're right. But also, you have to wait. I'm using this application, and it's worth the price. For example, I switched from using other application for development, like HTTP bot. Let me remember. I use those also for backend work. HTTP bot, it's an API testing application. And there are a couple of them that actually do the same thing. And then I was like, I'm using this very often. So why I don't reach out to the developer and say, hey, I'm using an application. I do like it. I want to support you, but I want to pay directly to Apple. Can I pay you directly? And he agreed. Awesome. He just issued me a license for his application for one yearly pay, and that's it. I just get access to that. So don't be afraid to reach out to these small developers, because one, they will love that you are using their product, and number two, you can make amazing deals and at the same time support the development. Let me tell you, if tomorrow Play.js decides to go subscription-based, I will pay for that.
Would you?
Play.js, it's an application that allows me to do React and React Native applications directly on the iPad. It doesn't rely on external things. I can be offline. I can be on the beach. I can be, on a plane. Well, not recently because, stuff going on.
Yeah.
But you can be anywhere and you can code your mobile application or your web application right there. When you are finished with that, you can export that directly from their application to a production server. I mean, Play.js, it's an amazing tool that is just one price at a time. But if they go subscription-based, I would just gladly pay it, because it's one of those applications you need to have if you are a web developer. Also, that application helps me to do Node.js applications, because they integrated the the engine directly into the app. So you don't have to use external servers or something like that to run your Node.js applications. You just run it there and that's it. And then when you combine that to HTTP bot, you can actually test those API endpoints inside of your iPad. Isn't that amazing? You don't need anything else. And it's so cheap for everything that they offer you. The flexibility of working on the thing that you do on a device that it's groundbreaking for the size and the power that the iPad is.
Yeah, I just looked up play.js in the App Store and it's a whole $7 for the app. Mm-hmm. And then there's in-app purchases and one of them's called Make a Living with Play.js and that is another $5. So as expensive as it gets, it's $12 all in. I mean, you can't really complain about that.
You cannot complain about that. And there are other applications like Pythonista and JSON, REST, that they help you to do pretty much the same. Pythonista, if you're a Python developer, you can have a full environment for Python inside of your iPad. But not only on the code side, you can also do interfaces, drag and drop, use a pencil for that. I mean, if you are a developer doing Python, and you want to do it on the go, the iPad is the best device you can just get it into. It's really, really easy to get started. And not only that, they also give you a guidance on how to do applications on Python if you are brand new to the developer environment.
Yeah, there's some templates included in it when you first open it, and it walks you through, man, there's, I think, half a dozen little apps mm-hmm. that run just inside the application itself, inside Pythonista itself, that you can fully mess around with and customize and tailor to your own liking. And it's been a while since I've used it beyond those demos, but at one point it integrated with Workflow, or Workflow integrated with it, so you could send data yes. back and forth between not only Workflow or shortcuts, Workflow is now shortcuts, but you could send it between other apps as well.
Yes, and just a small tip, if you want to use a database inside of your iPad, JSON, it's the application for you. JSON basically, it works or acts as a database for workflows, and it's all JSON objects that you can just talk to each other. You can have databases in it. You can insert documents. It's like having your whole development ecosystem within the iPad. You don't have to leave even for having a database in here. And sometimes JSON is not comprehensive enough. You need to have a more robust database inside of your iPad. You can try Jupyter. Jupyter is also an application that allows you to have huge databases inside of your iPad. And when you are ready to move that to production, you can export that directly to many, many third-party hostings for databases of that nature.
So you use a lot of different apps daily. Is that a fair statement?
I will say I use between 12 and 15 applications a day. Yes.
And you're doing all of this on the 11-inch iPad Pro.
That's why I got the 1 terabyte, because I know that I need it more than the basic storage. Yes.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm trying to picture is what's your multitasking setup like as far as bouncing between all of these apps? Are you using shortcuts to facilitate passing data between apps? Are you using split screen, slide overs, combination of all of that? Like if you were to sit down and start working on something right now, what does your screen look like?
Well, basically, if you look at my screen, you will see my sidebar just filled with shortcuts. But those shortcuts are not only the ones provided by Apple. I use third-party applications as well. One of the applications that I like to use is Pythonista, because it allows me to create specific interfaces of a small snippet of code into my iPad. For example, if I need to log my time, I need to automate a couple of things on Salesforce and all that kind of stuff, I have a script for that. So it's 8 a.m. I need to log in into the system. I click on one of my shortcuts and it will do everything that I need to do on Salesforce to get started, get online, tap into my extension on the office, my old extension on the office, into a VoIP solution that we are using. which, by the way, I have a BOIP application here, which is 3CX. It's very good and it's cheap. But shortcuts basically between Pythonista and Flex Widgets, which is the name of the application, are what actually makes most of my automated job. If I need to log time, I have a specific shortcut for that. And I rely on between shortcuts and Siri commands because you can trigger the same shortcuts using Siri. So yes, I'm a guy who actually talks with his computer very often, probably more often than with other developers around the company.
Maybe that's where the weird thing came from.
Probably, yeah, probably that's it. I never looked at that.
Yeah.
But well, split screen, it doesn't work for me. And this is a personal choice. The reason for that is I get easily distracted. So yeah. When working on an iPad, you can work one application at a time. You can have two applications. You can have three applications. I mean, side, slide out.
Yeah.
And you can have four things on your screen at the same time. If you're playing a video, like I do all the time with YouTube and stuff, but just in the background, I don't see the video. I just listen to the video because it helps my process. But most of the time, I do work either one application at a time, or I use an external monitor with it. And this is something that it's part of my setup, not only the iPad, but when I'm sitting at my improvised desk, which is our kitchen counter, I do have an external monitor and I rely on another application to make use of that external monitor. Because, you know, the iPad itself, it doesn't have like external screen support.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just like replicate the same thing that you are seeing on your screen, but that's not really useful. This application that I use actually helps me to take care of that part, and that is called Swift Screen. Probably you have heard about it.
I sure have. And let me stop you right there. I want to take a quick break to hear an ad from our sponsor. And then when we come back, you're going to dive into this because I have heard about this app. I've tried to use it and I've struggled. So I want to know your secrets. So we'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Kensington, maker of the innovative award-winning Studio Dock for iPad. If you want to truly get the most from your USB-C-based iPad Pro or iPad Air, then Studio Dock is for you. It's a beautifully designed docking station that your iPad magnetically attaches to. You can use it in portrait or landscape mode, and it charges your entire Apple ecosystem, including Qi wireless devices. It's got tons of expansion ports and comes with a 3-year warranty. Expand your creativity with Studio Dock. On sale now at Kensington.com, along with their other Apple accessories, including rugged cases, locks, and privacy screens. All right, welcome back. So, Luis, you were telling us about an app you use on an external monitor to make the iPad work for you instead of just mirroring your display. Let's hear some more about it.
Yes. Sadly, as far of today, iPad OS 14, luckily, it's going to change in the future. The iPad, it doesn't support or really offers any value added to an external screen. Of course, you can connect your iPad to an USB Type-C monitor, or you can just get an adapter, get a HDMI out of it and just connect it to another screen. And it's going to work by replicating what you are seeing there into the other screen. But for me, that doesn't add any value at all. So what I do is I went to the store, I tried to find something, and I found an application that I really like. It's not that expensive, and it's really worth it. It's called Shift Screen. Basically, what this application is capable of doing is to use the whole full state of your external screen, regardless of what kind of monitor you have. And I'm talking about the ratio, 69:4:3, whatever it is. And you can have up to three different things showing up in that monitor. There's one caveat, and I'm okay with it, which is the application has to be active on your iPad. That means you have to have it on split screen, or you need to have it on 1/3 of the screen and 2/3 with another application. But as long as this application is live in your iPad, you can use your external monitor with different things. So the first thing that you will see when you open this application, and I really encourage all of the developers or any users of iPad to download this if you want to really use your iPad with an external screen, is a browser. So basically, you can just add three different browsers, one third of your external screen, to different things. But not only that, they can also support some web applications. For example, if you have using YouTube Studio, you can open YouTube Studio inside of this application, and it will show on one part of your external screen. And you can interact with it because you can have access to control that particular part of the screen with your keyboard and mouse. And you can do a lot of things. Normally, what I do is just keep my tickets open into one part of the screen.
Gotcha.
On the center part, I get the chat room and my chat on the company. On the other one, I keep YouTube. And yeah, I know. It's one of those things.
I do a lot of work. Well, usually when I'm on the iPad, it is connected to an external monitor. And, mm-hmm. you know, one of my biggest gripes, and I've talked about it on this show as well, I was on iPad Pros just a few weeks ago, and I talked about it on there as well, is that there's no true external display support, like you were just mentioning. And so I've downloaded Shift Screen, and instead of having the black bars on each side of the mirrored display, and some apps can take advantage of the full display. That's how Shift Screen is able to do this, but not a lot of them do it, or if they do, they don't do it very well. Yes. And so effectively, from the 10 minutes I tried to figure out Shift Screen and then got distracted and then forgot all about it until we started talking about it just now, is you're basically using three different web browser tabs in Shift Screen, mm-hmm. right? So if you wanted to keep Slack open and you wanted to have your email, or let's say Gmail, open, and then, like you said, YouTube, you would have effectively three different browser tabs open that are taking advantage of your full external monitor while also still having access to your apps on your iPad as long as you keep Shift Screen open. Fair?
Yeah, that is correct. That's correct. That's accurate.
And so it's like the best way to take advantage of it right now, unfortunately, and Apple needs to fix that.
Well, it seems to be going to be fixed, but I do remember talking with, I remember the name of this guy. It's a developer that I used to know that works on Apple. And he said, well, I cannot tell you anything, but just be aware, the iPad, it's evolving every two versions. So if we are right now in 14, 13 was, the previous one was very good, but 14 was more of getting bug fixes.
Yeah.
15 is going to be just new features, new stuff, and something that we're going to like it. And I'll say, if I have to make a bet, and I am not John Prosser, like I'm going to be shaving my eyebrows, but I will say, iPadOS 15, it will bring some of that thing that it's missing from external displays. But for example, let me give you a little brief explanation of a list of applications that actually uses an external monitor.
Uh-huh.
One of them is LumaFusion. In the external monitor, you will see your play, your videos, and on your iPad, you will see your timeline. Document 5, which is an amazing application. If you don't have it, you have to use it. Is way more powerful than a Finder. And let me tell you something. You remember what happened with shortcuts? Well, before that, it was called Workflow.
Yeah.
Workflow got acquired by Apple and integrated into the system. I do believe that Documents from Riddle is going to be happening the same thing.
You think so?
They are amazing. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They are amazing. And I believe that application should be part of the system like since yesterday. It's a missing opportunity, or probably Apple is doing it on purpose to entice the developers to offer something on top of whatever it's offering into the system. Procreate also uses the external monitor in a wise way. And, well, Shift Screen. If there's another application that I am not aware of and another people using their iPad knows about, just tell me, because I'm eager to actually prove my point to my boss. I say, hey, dude, I need you to buy me this 32-inch monitor for my iPad because it will make a lot of sense because of this application.
Yeah. So I use an application called Screens, which allows you to remotely access other computers. So I use it to access some PCs I have around the house, as well as my MacBook from time to time. And their implementation of external monitor support is exactly like when I open the app, my external monitor looks just like a Mac or a Windows PC. It takes up the full screen. It's as if I'm sitting in front of that actual computer. They do a great job at making it work with an external monitor. So that's one. I think it's like $30 for the application. And then you could install the Kinect client on as many computers as you want. And it syncs it all up for you. And it's kind of like Coda we were talking about earlier, or Coda Editor. Once you sign into your account, your Screens Connect account, it syncs across all of your devices. So you have access no matter what device you're on. It's pretty cool. And like I said, it does a great job with external monitor to support. But you look at an app like iMovie or Photos, which are Apple's own apps, and those are some of the most ridiculous implementations of external monitor support in existence, because you don't know when, at least I can't figure out, when Photos app is going to go full screen or it's going to mirror. Like, I know when you hit edit, it changes, but sometimes it doesn't always change the right way. I don't know. I really hope you're right about iPad OS 15, but I hope it comes in iPad OS 14.5. I don't want to wait until September for all the bugs to be ironed out. I want it to show up now. Like, I want it now, which, you know, who knows? They surprised us last year. Apple surprised us last year by releasing trackpad support in a dot update. Maybe we'll get a nice iPad feature in 14.5. So I hope so.
I hope so.
One thing I did want to talk about, you mentioned to me what exactly your external monitor is, and we haven't touched on it quite yet during the show. So I have a lot of questions about this, because you're using a 13.3-inch monitor that you can get on like Amazon. It's a 2K monitor. It's not like a dedicated computer monitor, but it's more of a portable setup, right?
Yes, that's correct. So it's a small monitor, but it has something that I liked a lot, which is it's 2K, which means the resolution of the monitor, it's 2560 by 1440, which for a developer means a lot, because you can have multiple windows, and the size is just like seeing a MacBook Pro 13 inches just in real size. I like it because it doesn't consume a lot of memory. And number two, because it connects via USB-C directly to my iPad. So I don't have to carry around my USB-C adapter to HDMI and then connect a weird HDMI from full size to mini size on the other side. And also at the same time, run a power cable, which is micro USB, to a USB normal. No. You don't have to do that. It's just USB directly from the iPad to the screen. And that's going to be providing power and also video, which is very, very good. I got that one when I had my MacBook Pro a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. When I sold it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep this one. Probably it's going to be useful. So I use it around multiple things. I use it when I want to use my Mac Mini, because I have an M1 Mac Mini that I just bought, because as a developer, you need to have one of those just in case.
Sure.
But also for my iPad. And it's so slim. It doesn't take any more space on my back. It's always with me all the time. I mean, yeah, when I mean in my back, it's because I roam around the house, either working in the kitchen, on the couch. I come to the basement to work there. So it's always with me. It's very nice. It's affordable in a manner. I mean, $120 is not that much for a monitor that it's 2K and it's portable, but also the brightness. When working on an iPad, that means you are not just working inside of your home. You can just work wherever you want, because if you have an iPad and your iPad has LTE, you can go to the park with all the measurements possible. Please wear a mask and all that kind of stuff. But you can work because the brightness of this monitor is really, really good. Probably on par with the iPad, I will say.
So you don't have any issues seeing it in sunlight?
No, direct sunlight is very useful. And you can just, well, you have to put some shade on top of it so you can just don't get the glare. But other than that, it's very good. That's the only thing that I don't like. It's not matte finish. So if it were matte finish, oh my God, I would just buy two of them just for the sake of owning two of them.
So
that's the only complaint that I have.
Yeah, I was looking at them after you sent me a list of the stuff you use. And I was like, wait, this monitor. So I looked it up on Amazon. And I think now, probably because of the pandemic, price has gone up a bit. So it was $159 as of this morning, actually. But they don't include anywhere on there that it can directly link to your iPad Pro via USB-C. The way it's listed makes it seem like you have to carry around all these adapters. So you telling me that is a huge benefit and something I wish that they would update their page for. I personally don't have a need for a monitor of this size, but I can see, especially with using something like shift screen, or if we end up getting full external monitor support, where something like this that's portable and is powered through the iPad would be so beneficial. I would pick one up with true monitor support. I would pick one up in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's something that any iPad user, a heavily iPad user, should have in their bag, an external monitor and a proper application to use it, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. When we go back to traveling, you know, when I travel and go cover events, whether it's an Apple event or Google or Samsung or whatever, I only travel with my iPad. I don't take a computer with me. And so having a monitor that's as thin as the iPad, effectively, sitting back in the hotel room, so when I go back to write, I can have a dual screen setup. I mean, I'm all over that. That's speaking right to me.
Something that we're looking into is there's a new like a stand that they are selling from Kensington. It's called the Studio
Dock.
Dock. Oh yeah, that's hell of expensive. But if you're looking to make your iPad more feeling like a desk setup,
yeah,
I will say let's go for that price. I mean, $400 at this moment. But if you pair that with a nice keyboard, a nice mouse, and a Nimbus controller, man, you have the whole package there. I mean, because, yeah, the iPad, it's also pretty good for gaming.
It is. It is. Especially with Apple Arcade, or you can remotely connect to your Xbox and game on there. So I've been, speaking of Kensington, anyone who's listened to the ad and the intro to this podcast knows they're the sponsor of this podcast, of this episode, actually. And I've been using the Studio Dock for about 3 weeks now. And it's amazing, dude. Like, I reviewed it. Yeah, I reviewed it for ZDNet.com. So if you want to get my full thoughts, anyone listening to this or you, Luis, you could read through my full thoughts on it. The review went live at Embargo Lift, which was on March 16th. But Look, it's pricey. It's $400 for the 12.9-inch version. I think you save $20 for the 11-inch version. But it combines a lot of devices into one, has a ton of power as far as powering different accessories and ports. I mean, it has four USB ports on it and an SD card reader and an HDMI port, and has two Qi wireless charging pads. And so it does quite a bit. But my biggest question comes down to, what happens when Apple redesigns the iPad? Like, what do I do with this?
Oh, don't say that.
But I'm serious. Or there's magnets that hold the iPad in place on the mount. What if Apple moves those magnets and it no longer lines up with Kensington's alignment? Like, what are those issues we have to work through? And we're so close to a rumored iPad Pro. It's very hard to be like, yeah, go out and get one if you're thinking about upgrading, because we don't know what that's going to line up like, you know? So if you're listening to this and Apple has not announced a new iPad yet, which they might do before this episode goes live, hold off until they do and we know more about it. If you're thinking about getting a Studio Dock, if you're happy with the iPad Pro you have now or the fourth gen iPad Air, the Studio Dock is amazing. Whether you're using it as a miniature iMac, turn your iPad into a miniature iMac, or you're using it to connect to a bigger monitor on your own. So yeah, it's a great product, dude. But like you said, it's really, really expensive. I truly enjoy using it though. I don't know. I'm so torn on it overall.
I was this close to just click the buy button until you said that. I will just wait for next week. But yeah, it's expensive though. And the same thing is going to happen with my Magic Keyboard. I love my Magic Keyboard, and I know that Apple is not going to get rid of the size, 11 inches. But as you said, probably because of new accessories, whatever they want to call it, they will change the position of the magnets. It's going to be a whole problem to get existing accessories to work with the new iPad. But let's hope that they will not do that, because I've been tracking this studio dog for over 2 months now.
Yeah, me too.
And when they announced it, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna get it. And then you said that, and I was like, oh my god, I don't think I'm gonna get it.
Well, I mean, maybe there's enough magnets in the stand where it doesn't matter where Apple ends up putting them. I don't know. Who knows? So a minute ago, you mentioned that you have an M1 Mac Mini, and
yes,
you said developers always have to have a Mac. So I guess the part I want to dive into now is what portion of your workflow requires you to have a Mac, and where do you find yourself moving from your iPad to a Mac in order to get your job done?
Yeah, of course. So I get the iPad is not the solution for all of the problems. And sometimes the iPad is not up to the challenge, I will say. I was going to say it's not good enough, but yeah, it really is good enough. But when it's not up to the challenge, I see myself doing one of two things. Number one, either I open my Jump desktop application, which is a remote desktop application, the same as the screens. But the way that I have both applications, but I prefer to use Jump because they were the first one to integrate mouse support inside of their applications. And Dobia just added that a couple of months after they did it on Jump. So I decided to keep it Jump because I have a great relationship with those developers. But when the iPad is not enough for doing something or the project is exceeding the limits of my applications on the iPad, I use either my M1 Mac Mini or an iMac 2019, I believe it is. And I log in remotely and I work remotely that way. As I told you at the start of the show, I'm a full stack developer. So that means sometimes I'm doing React or React Native or backend work, but at the same time, I do Swift. And there's no application in the iPad to do Swift up to this moment, because that may change in the future.
Yes.
Doing native applications for iOS, it always requires an iMac. And that's why I sold my MacBook Pro, but I kept my iMac because, one, I love the iMac. It's an amazing full-size screen. I'm just seeing it from across the room. I see you right there. It's an amazing device, and I loved it. But sometimes I don't want to be trapped in my desk for my work time. That's why I use the iPad, because I can just jump to the desktop at any time that I need to. But yes, there are times that the iPad and the applications available right now, they are not up to the challenge, and I have to go back to my computer. I told you, yes, I do have an M1 Mac Mini that I bought it because I felt that it was a nice device to have. And also as a developer, when a client tells me, hey, we have the iPad application, can we just release to the Mac? And I was like, I don't know, maybe. Now I have an iPad that I can do testing. But at the same time, it's something that I keep with me because it's very small.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, man. The iPad is right now a very powerful device, but sometimes you need to have a backup computer. And for me, it's either the Mac Mini or the iMac.
So do you ever sit down in front of the iMac, or is it always accessing it through your iPad?
I will be lying if I tell you that I don't do it very often.
Yeah.
But yes, I do. And the reason for that is, one, the external display support.
Sure.
The 11-inch is a very nice and compact device. But honestly, working in that size of a screen the whole day, it tires me. So
yeah, I could
sometimes
see that.
I wake up and I was like, yeah, I don't want to stare at this small screen. I will just prop it up my second monitor. And then I look at the second monitor. At the same time, I was like, yeah, no, I feel today like I need the 27 inches like right now.
Yeah.
So I just go to my basement and I just work from there.
I could totally relate to that. I have those days too where I'm just like, you know, I could get a lot done on the iPad, but for some reason, a giant monitor that's fully taken up just seems easier to use today.
Make more sense.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's not all the time. I mean, honestly, I believe that when you get used to the way iPad things work,
Yeah.
I mean, I do find myself trying to split screen on the iMac very often. Even
yes.
Even my wife tried to do that. Yeah, yeah. One time we were in the kitchen, I was with the monitor with the Mac Mini, and she was like, "Oh, let me just open up my Twitter and just like swipe from the side." And I was like, "This is not an iPad. I mean, it's this is an iPad, but this is not a monitor on my Mac Mini."
Yeah.
It was like, "Sorry, honest mistake." And it happens when you get used to the flow and the way everything works in an iPad is just like instantaneous for you. One thing that I like from the iPad that I don't like from my Mac is the iPad is very speedy. You don't have to wait for an application to open.
Right.
You don't have to wait for copying a file or something like that. The way that they design the file system, it's amazing. And the only thing that I can compare that in a desktop computer is the Mac Mini M1.
Yeah, I have a M1 MacBook Pro, and it's insanely fast. It's quick.
Yes, yes. And hopefully, this is just my rumor, they will launch an iPad that's going to be a hybrid between the M1 and the iPad as we know it today. Oh my God, that will be so cool. Something that you can just run Xcode in it, so yeah. I don't have to rely on my computer. And let me tell you, I am not going to be shaving my eyebrows, but for your audience, if Apple this year decides to get an iPad, let's say 13 inches, but at the same time, I can run Xcode there, like I do it on my computer, I will sell my iMac. Will sell it.
It's gone.
Yes, yes. It's gone. It's done.
So the last question I was going to ask you is, what do you want Apple to announce in new hardware? You know, since we've mentioned it a few times now, the rumors are we're really close to new hardware. Besides a 2-for-1 deal for you, which I think would probably be at the top of your list, it sounds like, any hardware, the processor, obviously, you just mentioned with Xcode support, but is there anything else besides that that you would want to see in hardware?
Well, couple of weeks ago, I will say more ports or real connectivity. Honestly, I believe USB-C, it's the port. I don't need anything else on my iPad. If I were to have more ports, more likely I will use all of them and it will be just a cluttered environment for me.
Yeah.
Having just one connector, it really cleans out my desk. Cleans out everything that I need to. I keep my adapters in a small box. So whenever I need to plug something, I plug it, I use it, and I just put it away. Doesn't have to be all the time connected. I feel, and this is just a personal opinion, if I get access to more ports or different connectivity, it will be just clutter. I believe the iPad, the way it is, it's fine. Probably a better front-facing camera because meetings.
Right. Yeah, and move it to the center when it's in landscape mode.
Oh, please. Yeah. Just give me two of them. I mean, it's kind of weird, like be looking at the screen and then look down to the camera and like look at the screen again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. Or at least external support for cameras, USB camera, something that you can just plug there and just use it whenever you need it to. I mean, I'll be happy with that. But honestly, as a developer, please give me Xcode and really useful external display usage.
Yeah, those two things. Awesome. Which I mean,
and I will buy it.
Yeah, and that could be software updates, right? I mean, the 2020 iPad Pro is fast. It's very powerful. So this could just all be software stuff. You know, who knows? Who knows what we'll see in iPad OS 15, which hopefully we'll get a preview of in June if Apple sticks to its normal schedule. So, Luis, before we close everything out, because we've spent a good amount of time talking over your workflow, and I truly appreciate that, why don't you tell listeners where they can find you, if you want them to find you online or where they can, you know, on social or wherever else?
Oh, yeah, of course. You can find me as L Alcaraz. That's going to be LALCARAZ as in zebra, pretty much on all the social networks.
Great.
Except for two. There's one, Luis Alcaraz, which is not me, that is doing some weird stuff, and Tinder. So that's not me, guys. That's not me. But LALCARAZ as in zebra, Luis Alcaraz, you can find me pretty much anywhere.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time. I appreciate you taking some time out on a Wednesday afternoon to talk to me. Hopefully your boss is okay with that. And hey, if anyone has any questions for you or has any feedback, anything about the applications you've mentioned or workflows, maybe they figured something out that you haven't, please reach out to Luis on his socials like you just mentioned. And, you know, let's keep this conversation going. And again, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It was fun. It was nice to meet someone that actually shared my passion for the iPad.
What a fun conversation that was. Luis sure knows his stuff. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review or rating in your favorite podcast app and make sure to subscribe or follow as well. That way you're alerted when a new episode goes live every other Tuesday. If you have any feedback, know of someone who would make for a great guest, or just want to talk about all things iPad, please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at Mr. Sippy. That's MRCIPPY. As always, thanks for listening. Now, let's get to work.